Welcome to Burlington Humane, the podcast of the Burlington Humane Society, Ontario's premier no-kill shelter.
My society.
My society.
Burlington Humane is my society.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Burlington Humane, the podcast of the Burlington Humane Society. My name's Doug, and I'm coming to you from beautiful Burlington, Ontario. On this episode of Burlington Humane, we'll talk with author and advocate Malcolm Bernstein. He's the founder of the Benjamin Project and educates children and adults about responsible pet ownership. We'll also hear from Anne-Marie Richter about her experience adopting senior cats with special needs in our Happy Tales section. And we'll learn about all the latest Burlington Humane news and events. So stay with us for this and much more on Burlington Humane. Honoring the goodness of pets and eliminating animal cruelty are the goals of the Benjamin Project, an initiative started by Malcolm Bernstein. I talked with Malcolm about the Benjamin Project and his dog Benjamin, who inspired it. I'm here with Malcolm Bernstein, who is the developer of the Benjamin Project. Welcome, Malcolm, to Burlington Humane.
Thank you, Doug. It's a real pleasure and an honor to be here.
Great. Now, what is the Benjamin Project?
The Benjamin Project is a not-for-profit initiative that I started with my wife, Helen, and I in 2014 in memory of our dog. Benjamin was our dog for 13 incredibly wonderful years. And we decided to do something to try and pay tribute to him and his life and build a legacy to him after we lost him in 2013. The essence of the project is educating kids around responsible pet ownership and broader animal stewardship and raising funds for shelter sanctuaries and rescue organizations.
Wow. And how do you do that?
I wrote a book about Benjamin in 2014, which was really his life and times with us and our experience as a family. And I wrote a second book, a kid's book, which was published in 2018, so just last year. We sell the books and we donate all the funds accordingly. So all the funds that we raise from sale of the book are donated to the shelter sanctuaries and rescue organizations. In addition to that, people make donations to the Benjamin Project, and we donate those in full as well. So we don't retain any money whatsoever as a family. Mm-hmm. It's all donated. So that's how we raise the funds.
Wonderful. Now, was Benjamin a rescue dog?
Benjamin was a rescue dog.
Where did you adopt him from?
So we got him from the OSPCA. And just
which is the Ontario
Society for Provincial Cruelty to Animals,
yeah,
in Newmarket. And just to share a little anecdote, if you can imagine a beautiful spring day, it's May of 2000, the first Saturday in May, gorgeous day, sun shining, birds are chirping, we're sitting in our kitchen having breakfast, and Helen tells me that she's been looking for a dog for my 50th birthday.
Oh.
And she said she's been speaking to shelters around the Greater Toronto Area and beyond. And they told her at the OSPCA they had a little boy there, mm-hmm, who wasn't glamorous, but the most laid-back dog they've ever seen. And did we want to take a look? So she tells me this over breakfast on May the 6th of 2000. And, of course, we were in the car within probably 30 seconds heading up to the shelter. And that's where we first met him. The most beautiful, friendly, gentle, exuberant dog you can imagine. We took him for a walk. We fell in love with him. And that was the start of our lives together.
Excellent. And what kind of a dog was Benjamin?
So Benjamin was a mixed terrier. He took his years to figure out he was a border terrier, which is, you know, just lap dog size, mixed with something huge. So he was a mid-size, quite tall terrier with the most magnificent multicolored coat. Once he was skin and bones when we saw him the first time. Once he filled out, he was the most athletic, energetic, exuberant, and also wise and courageous creature you've ever met, who befriended anything and everything that moved, and everyone and everything that met him loved him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I wrote about all that in the book. We talk about it in the presentation. So in terms of work to advance the Benjamin Project, I present on his life to kids in schools, in library settings, at Humane Society kids camps like yours, mm-hmm. where you graciously invited me in. And we had a wonderful session a few weeks ago in the evening.
The kids loved hearing about Benjamin.
The kids loved hearing about him, and they didn't want to leave the room, and the parents were outside. Yeah. We have to go home now.
Yeah.
And so that's the reaction that we see everywhere in terms of telling his story. Kids love the story, and importantly, they can relate to it, and their responsibilities as pet owners, as would-be owners, and as stewards of the broader animal kingdom.
Yeah.
And so we talk about not just Benjamin, but we have them tell their stories. We explore their responsibilities. And we talk about the sentience and the wisdom of the animal realm and what these creatures represent, whether they're dogs, cats, winged animals, mammals of the deep. They're all sentient beings. Mm-hmm. And we talk about our responsibilities to them as stewards of their lives. And kids just love this. And what we ask them to do is make a pledge to become a Benjamin Booster and take that story forward with them throughout their lives and live his principles and what he represented and, by extension, eliminate animal cruelty from the world and make the world a better place. And so that's what we do with the presentation. Adults, by the same token, right through to seniors in residences where we present, love the story, tell their own stories, buy books, not only for themselves, but for their children and their grandchildren.
So
what we're trying to do is form Benjamin Booster chapters all over the world, mm-hmm. Have legions of Benjamin Boosters, and not only through them eliminate animal cruelty, but also help organizations like yours from a funding perspective, so that you can do the great work you do in terms of the core business of the shelter, but also education, advocacy, and building broader-based community.
Which is so important, important.
Around animal welfare.
Yeah. Now, Benjamin obviously had an impact on your life, so much so that you've started the Benjamin Project. What was the impact that he had?
It's a great question, and it's so hard to put into words, but one of Helen's drivers in the first instance was knowing that, of course, we were both dog lovers, was hoping to bring a creature into our lives which would help me get off the path of workaholism, which I've always had.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm still on that path. But what it did do is ensured that I built time into my life and our lives for something beyond just the work. Mm-hmm. And so, being a runner and Benjamin being so athletic, every morning, pretty much at 5 o'clock, we'd be out for a run. And not just having a default, which for me was, okay, I really want to go for a run, but today I'm too busy, I'm heading to the office. So that was an impact. You know, every night we'd be out for our family walk, regardless of the weather, or in the winter, if we couldn't run, we'd go out for a walk. But I had to do this. And it wasn't, I have to do this. It was something that I really wanted to do.
So you made the time.
Made the time, and it was just a pleasure. You fit it in, and it was incredibly therapeutic. Of course, we all know that for me personally. We met so many people by virtue of having Benjamin in our lives. People we never would have spoken to. Everybody on the street stopped us every single day that we had Benjamin for 13 years and said, what a beautiful dog. Where did you get him? He reminds me of a movie dog. Was he in Lady of the Tramp? let's talk. And every creature he met, dog, cat, you name it, even baby skunk, who I write about in our book, just gravitated to him. He had that kind of impact. So we met so many people. And interestingly enough, I started writing my first book about Benjamin when he's about 5. Because he was such an incredible little boy, I wanted to share the story with the world. Uh-huh. What happened was that over time, I couldn't really get to complete it because of work. But when he became ill the first time, when he was around 12, I went back to writing the book and chronicling, almost as a journal, living that experience with him. And then I finished the book shortly after he passed away, and it was a recurrence of his disease that was incredibly distressing for him, let alone as well as for us. And so the impact he had on us from that perspective was living, as so many people do, the ravages of the cancer, the disease of cancer, and the experience related to that, and making a determination that I would do something and we would do something to honor his life accordingly through education and fundraising. So I think that the legacy we're trying to build to him is the lasting impact he had on me and on us.
And there's so many amazing messages in Benjamin's story. You know, you adopted him and you bettered his life, but he obviously added to your life as well. And we hear that so often with people who adopt our animals, that yes, they adopt them, but they get so much more back from the animals.
There's no question that that's just so true. I was mentioning to someone the other day, in terms of the voluntary nature of our project, that, you know, it brings joy to so many people, but in the first instance, it's a selfish kind of thing. It's really the meaning for us, and how good it feels to be honoring his life and to be bringing that joy to others, and to do that education with others. In the first instance, it's really so meaningful for oneself.
Great. Yeah. Now, where can people get more information about the Benjamin Project?
So thanks for asking. We have a website, www.thebenjaminproject.ca.
Thebenjaminproject.ca.
Right. Yep. And so we have tons on our site about the project, a lot of postings about animal welfare and the like. People can also reach out to me and us directly at 416-587-8590. And we're at people's disposal to provide ways to purchase the book. The first book is also on Amazon, and it's on Indigo and through Fries & Press, the publisher. Our second book is published by 1000 Trees Publishing out of Guelph. Yeah. Lisa Browning's the publisher, and she just was fantastic in adopting the Benjamin Project, taking us under her wing and doing all the publishing pro bono of the kids' book, knowing that we donate all the funds. So in any case, there are ways to obtain the book. There are ways to book me as a speaker in schools, libraries, companies, corporations, and any other venue. And I spend a lot of time in these speaking engagements, which are vehicles to share his story, do the education, and raise funds. So more than happy to hear from anyone. Frankly, anywhere across Ontario, the country, and around the world, as to how we can partner to take his story to the world.
Great. Oh, that's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us here on Burlington Humane.
It's been such a thrill, such a privilege. You and your team do an incredible job, and I can't thank you enough.
Thank you. We'll see you again. Bye-bye. Summer is coming, and everyone is looking forward to beautiful sunny days. However, When the temperature soars, a parked car can quickly become a furnace, endangering an animal's life. Even on relatively mild days, with the car parked in the shade and the window slightly open, an animal can die in a parked car. With only hot air to breathe, a dog's normal cooling process, panting, doesn't work. Even a short time in a hot environment can be life-threatening.
I left the window down for him.
It's not too hot for me.
I wasn't going to be gone long.
No more excuses. It's imperative that each of us, as animal owners, is responsible in providing the proper care for our pets. Never leave a pet unattended in a vehicle. Owners who choose to leave pets unattended may face charges under the Criminal Code of Canada. And if you see an animal unattended in a vehicle, report it. Call 911 or your local police. No more excuses. Act fast, save a life. For more information, go to www.nohotpets.ca. No more excuses. Nohotpets.ca. Edition of Tailogram, the newsletter of the Burlington Humane Society, we had a story about Callie, a senior cat with special needs, who was adopted by Anne-Marie Richter. I visited Anne-Marie to learn more about her desire and experience with senior cats and those with special needs. I'm here with Anne-Marie Richter. Anne-Marie, welcome to Burlington Humane.
Thank you.
Now, Anne-Marie, you adopted one of our cats. Who did you adopt?
I actually adopted two. I adopted Callie and I adopted Norman.
And when did you do that?
This was about 4 years ago. One of my friends, his sister volunteers at the BHS.
Burlington Humane Society,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, and so I had let him know, okay, let me know if a special circumstance or a special cat comes in that, you know, maybe needs a little bit more attention and is unadoptable, because I knew I was going to go that route. And sure enough, I was told about Callie. And, you know, I was told she, I was told a little bit about her and that she's pretty sassy. And my friend let me know, and I came to Burlington. I had decided, okay, I put two kennels in my car because I knew I was going to be leaving with two. I walked in the door and I loved the way this is set up. It was such a wonderful place. It was very welcoming. I just remember, you know, the way it was set up, and it was so friendly and warm and whatnot. And then I had some paperwork that I had to fill out. It was, what kind of an animal do you want? And I'm like, who really needs a home and who's not going to get adopted? That's what I was there for. So, and I said, well, I'm here for Callie. And everybody kind of looked at each other and kind of, you know, and thought,
do you know who
Callie?
Callie
is? You're here for Callie? You know, Callie, right? I said, yes, I'm here for Callie. And they said, okay. And then she walked out and kind of looked at me and give me a second look. Mm-hmm. And then the counselor took her into the acquaintance room. Mm-hmm. And we sat down. And so I sat next to Callie and I went to pet Callie. And so we got to know each other. And I mean, she didn't trust me at all. I mean, there was no way. It's too quick, right?
Yes.
So I said, okay, you know, I'm good with her. And I was like, that was fast. And I said, so who's your second most unadoptable cat? Yeah. And she said, well, that's probably Norman. So I thought, okay, let me meet Norman. So Norman was 19 pounds, black cat, shaven from either the waist down or the neck down. No front claws. Mm-hmm. he looks great. Well, Norman would have been 17 this year, and he passed away last year. And then Callie's going to be 14. I got them 10 to 12 years old when I got them. So anyway, we brought Norman into the acquaintance room, and he just kind of waddled on in, all 19 pounds of him, and plopped himself in front of the chair that Callie was on. He was on the floor, and all she did was hiss at him. And he sat there. He just stared at her. He was purring with me. And then he just let out a big yawn, looked at her, and just walked away. And I thought, that is a match made in heaven. That's a match made in heaven. And I basically just on the spot said, great, you know, I'm going to take them both. So I think people were a bit surprised. Callie was a bigger challenge because Norman walked into the house. He sniffed around, claimed his couch, and that was Bob's your uncle, right? Yeah. He was fine. Callie, I couldn't go near her for about 3 or 4 days. Mm. And she stayed at the front door. She wouldn't move from the front door. She wouldn't eat because she's also polydactyl, right? So, if she wants to get you, she can get you.
Lots of toes. That's right. Claws, yes.
So she wasn't eating, and I had bought for their first night here. I had bought sushi for them.
For the cats.
Or sashimi, or whatever you want to call it. And I thought, well, welcome here, welcome home. And Norman just absolutely loved it. She wouldn't touch it.
Oh dear.
And she kind of hid under a chair in my office, and that's where her litter box is, and I had Norman in another area. They had they had separate boxes. So it took a while before I could even get near. And then we had to book a veterinary appointment for the both of them, and both Norman and Callie were terrors at the vet. They had to have the happy masks on. I was really worried that they weren't going to be able to examine them. But eventually it did eventually get better, especially because we were going so often.
Yes.
Because a year into it, we started having some problems.
Because they were seeing your animals.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
And then I started noticing some things on Norman, and sure enough, he was diagnosed with kidney disease. And then we started getting some funny blood results on Callie. It was something with the liver. With Norman, it was relatively straightforward. And then Callie, every single time we went, the results were different, and my vet kept saying to me, you know what, the only way we're really going to know what's going on is if you get a biopsy done. I was recommended to someone in Guelph. It was a private clinic, and we made an appointment, you know, packed a bag for Callie, and then we drove off to Guelph. And she was going to be going into surgery, I guess, somewhere around 11 o'clock. They called me, I guess, 2 or 3 hours later, and she was awake and she was alert, and she's very, very strong. So she was able to go home with me that day, and then of course the waiting began. Mm-hmm. It took a bit of time. I can't remember whether it took like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, but you know, 1 day is too much when you're waiting for results.
Exactly.
And it came back no cancer.
Oh, that's good.
But she does have liver disease. So, but at least now we knew what we were dealing with, mm-hmm. and we knew how to treat it. The same with Norman. It took a couple of years to get everything right. Like with we were going every 2 weeks with both of them for blood work. So they got pretty used to the vet.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they loved it, but I think that they got used to going there, and they kind of knew they felt better.
Mm-hmm. And then Callie developed glaucoma?
That was recent. So over the summer, and it came on, overnight.
Oh, really suddenly.
Overnight, her eye just fogged up. I took her to the vet immediately, and then my vet has that machine to do the pressure on the eye, and said, you know what, pressure's high. I'm going to have to refer you to an ophthalmologist. So we were referred to MOVEX, so the
Mississauga Oakville Emergency Veterinary Clinic. Yeah.
So they had an ophthalmologist there. So when we saw them, the first course of action was we ended up, there's a few people that I saw there because I didn't want to rush into the most drastic thing, right? You want to see if you can save the eyes first. So she was on 4 or 5 different kinds of drops 8 times a day.
Oh, my goodness.
Intermittently. Okay. It had to be at different hours and whatnot. So then she developed an ulcer behind the eye, like, 'cause her retina detached. Mm-hmm. That's what would happen. And then within a week, the other eye went. And then she got very lethargic. She would not really move from the bed. And she'd press her head into the pillows. And I was told that that's because they have a lot of, it's like a migraine.
Yeah, trying to relieve the pain somehow.
Yeah. You know, we were at the ophthalmologist twice a week. You know, I was told at that time, look, she's in pain.
Yeah.
It's evident just based on the pressure. And I could tell that because the pressure would be going up and up and up and up. And I know she was in pain. And as much as I hated to do it, I had promised both of them that I would never let them suffer and I would do anything I could to make sure they were going to be okay. Mm-hmm. So we went ahead with the surgery. That was a tough one for me, but there really was no other choice.
Mm-hmm. And how did she adapt once she...
Well, I parked myself at MOVAC for the surgery. And again, she came through it really, really well. She was very high risk because of all the medication she was on and the steroids she was on. And you know, she was great. It was very, cone had to stay on for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. When you're with the cone, you're running into walls because you can't use your whiskers.
Yeah, that's right.
And again, I mean, she had, you know, everything had been shaved off anyway. So it was hard to maneuver for her anyway.
Now, did you notice any difference in her behavior? Was she out of pain? And then you could tell that there was relief there?
The first couple of days was hard to tell because she was very heavily sedated. And while all this was going on and Callie was trying to adapt, Norman got sick. Congestive heart failure. So I'd stop the fluids on him because his chest kept filling up with fluids. It was becoming unfair. He couldn't breathe properly.
And that's the hardest decision an owner has to make.
And I couldn't do that to him. Like, he was such a strong cat. He'd still jump around when he'd had such a hard time breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So that's what I did.
Yeah. And Callie was still recuperating from her operation. But once her cone was off and she was on the mend, how did she cope with not being able to see?
She knew where everything was. There's water bowls everywhere. She knew where every water bowl was. She knew where every bed was. She knew where every couch was. I don't know how she did. She just did. She went to sit in the spot that Norman had his litter box, and she just sat there.
Oh, my goodness.
Slowly but surely, she, you know, because it took a long time for her to complete, like, for the hair to grow back, for the fur to grow back, mm-hmm. for the eyes to heal, because you get this concave. And with the cone, she was bumping into a lot of things, and it really frustrated her. As soon as the cone came off and the whiskers were kind of there again, she would, you know, she'd be walking towards the wall, and I'd get really nervous, but I didn't want to do it for her because mm-hmm. I wanted her, she needed to learn that on her own, right? So she'd always been be heading toward the wall and all of a sudden take a sharp left because she knew that the wall was there.
Wow.
And very rarely did she run into things. The one thing I think that was the most amazing thing for me is everything that has gone on and everything that she's gone through, they don't complain.
Yeah.
Never, Norman didn't either, right? Never once. She had no eyes. And never did she complain. And I think we can take a real lesson from that because they don't.
Mm-hmm.
She just adapted. She knows where her beds are, all her beds. And she just knows where everything is. And she knows when we go to the vet. She knows when I go to volunteer. Something that has a tear bag like this.
Yeah.
Well, that must be for her.
Yeah. So with all of the medications that you have to give and everything that you've gone through, what has she brought to your life?
Oh my gosh, she is my life.
You've done so much for her. What does she bring for you?
I love them. I don't know what she went through. You know, the idea that I could take take two senior special needs home, and I knew that, you know, I wouldn't have them for 21 years.
Yeah.
I knew that. My job was to make sure that they had the best senior life ever, and that they were just, they felt safe, they felt happy, they were loved, they got the attention they needed, they got the medical attention they needed. That was my job. And just being around them and coming home and she meets me at the door, you know, having her purr for the first time when, you know, having her come and cuddle up to me, this I didn't even think would ever be possible for the first time I brought her home because she was beyond being able to be touched. Yes. So to be able to make that kind of a difference for both of them or for any one of them, you know, and I can't even put it into words because they bring so much to you. They love you unconditionally. Mm-hmm. They do. And it took her almost a year to really trust me. But when she did, my heart just melted because I knew it must have taken a lot for her to trust anyone.
Yes, exactly. And so animals can change when they know that they're in a safe space.
I think there's people out there who are caregivers and want to help and want to save and want to do whatever they can. I'm not someone who has a pet. They're my family. Mm-hmm. And the ones that need you, really need you, are the ones you save. Anybody who adopts a rescue saves an animal.
Yes,
okay? Period.
Definitely. So even though you provide a lot of care for her, she gives back just as much to you.
20 times over.
Oh, that's wonderful.
20 times over. Yeah. It's not a... I don't think it's possible that I could love her anymore. They all hold a special place in my heart. And
That's the kind of person who we want to adopt all of our animals, who just give unconditionally, just the same as the love that the animals give back to you is unconditional.
But even if she never got around to snapping out of her phase and she was mad all the time or something like that, that's okay.
Because that's her.
Because I don't know what she went through. I mean, it's like you think if you're...
Yeah.
And tell us what happened. Caregiver, you need to have patience.
And I know that there are many people who are thinking of adopting an animal. If they're able to adopt a senior animal or an animal that has special needs, those are the ones that really need a home. The kittens will get adopted. The puppies will get adopted. But it's the senior animals and animals with special needs that really need the love and care that special adopters can provide. You're a special adopter for sure.
Well, it's just what I think I was put here to do.
Yeah.
It'll be 4 years in August.
Oh, that's great.
And, you know, 4 years that I think she's been happy. Mm-hmm. And that is what that's what's important.
That's what she deserves.
And that's what she deserves. That's what they all deserve.
Yeah. Well, Anne-Marie, thank you so much
for
your story and telling us how Callie is doing.
She's doing great.
For taking such good care of her.
Oh,
well, thank
her.
You so much for coming to Burlington Humane.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You guys are great and I love what you do. And I really do hope that everybody gives the special needs and seniors a chance.
Oh, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And now it's time for news and events.
Have Burlington Humane be a part of your wedding by participating in Weddings with Burlington Humane. In lieu of costly favors, consider making a donation to your favorite no-kill shelter. Make your special day that much more special. Weddings with Burlington Humane.
Join us on Sunday, July 28th, for our Pooch Party. Sponsored by Ryan Legeza of KW Edge Realty, there will be music, food, and games for you and your pooch. Enter your dog into the fun as they participate in dog games, fashion shows, and many more activities. July 28th for Pooch Party at Burlington Humane.
Join us on Canada Day, July 1st at Spencer Smith Park as Burlington Humane takes part in the Burlington Canada Day festivities. We will have a booth and coloring pages for the kids. Be sure and come down and say hello and help celebrate Canada Day with Burlington Humane.
Are you prepared to help your pet in the event of an accident? What will you do until you can get them to the veterinarians? Burlington Humane is proud to offer Walks and Wags Pet First Aid Course. Walks and Wags Pet First Aid are national leaders in pet first aid and have the longest standing pet first aid course in Canada. It has earned the stamp of approval from Animal Wellness, North America's top animal wellness magazine. This hands-on, live practical gives you the skills and confidence to deal with illness and emergencies. The 10-hour course deals with how to prevent injuries, early signs of illness and poisoning, bandaging and splinting techniques, emergency medical conditions, choking, artificial respiration, and CPR, and much, much more. Upon successful completion, you'll receive a certificate valid for 3 years. Courses will run August 11th and November 10th. Go to our website at www.burlingtonhumane.ca for more information. Pet First Aid, August 11th and November 10th.
Find the latest information about events, ways to make a donation, the animals that are up for adoption, and much more. Visit our website at burlingtonhumane.ca. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Be sure to stay in touch and up to date with Burlington Humane.
That's it for this episode of Burlington Humane, the podcast of the Burlington Humane Society. I want to thank our guests, Malcolm Bernstein, founder of the Benjamin Project, and Anne-Marie Richter, one of our many wonderful adopters. Be sure to subscribe to Burlington Humane on iTunes. We are located at 740 Griffith Court in Burlington, Ontario. You can visit our website at www.burlingtonhumane.ca or give us a call at 905-637-7325. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Thank you for joining us. My name is Doug. We'll see you next time on Burlington Humane. Bye-bye.
My society. My society.
Burlington Humane is my society.